Thanks, Steve. Jess?
Cool. Okay, today I am going to draw you a picture of the reserve cycle, and I've created this reserve cycle using US annual statement data for the whole industry. But first of all, just to make sure we're all on the same page, what is a reserve? So a reserve is just an amount you're going to have to hold to pay for future losses, for accidents, that have already happened. So I'm going to build this cycle up for you right now. And you can see across the bottom, I've got accident years 1980 to 2011. And all I've done is, for the whole industry, I've just indexed it so that the first time we estimate the ultimate loss, we think it'll cost a dollar for each of these accident years. So hang on, what does that mean, just to clarify? If we zoom in, say, on accident year 2000, that contains all the accidents that happened in that year, and we're just saying that ultimately we think all these accidents are going to cost a dollar, and that's our first estimate made at December 31st, 2000. That's the first time it shows up in the annual statement. Now, 12 months later, we re-estimate that ultimate loss, and we change our minds, which is fine. You know, as we get some claims that come in and more data that comes in, we re-estimate our ultimate loss. And you can see for accident year 2000, now we think it'll cost about $1.025. 12 months later, again, in the next year end, we change our minds again. So for accident year 2000, now we think it'll cost $1.05. And we keep going like this every 12 months, re-estimating our ultimate loss until we get to 120 months or 10 years later, and this is when it drops off the annual statement. And this is a picture of what we're calling at Guy Carpenter the reserving cycle. So this is kind of interesting, and I want to point out two very clear trends here. Firstly, obviously, it's a cycle, so you have some series of good years. These are good because, remember, our estimates are going down. That means we can start releasing reserves in these years. And they're generally followed by a series of bad years. So you'll notice most recently we've had a series of very good years. Everyone has been releasing reserves. And there is a general fear that this is running out, which is probably kind of a correct fear. You can see we're tapering off here at the end. And that maybe this will be followed by a series of very bad years. The second trend I want to point out is, if you were watching me build this up very carefully, you would have noticed that those years that start to go bad keep getting worse without fail, and vice versa. Those years that go good keep getting better. So we never, for example, increase our estimate of ultimate loss and then think, you know, the next year, oh, I increased it too much, I'll put it back down now. That never happens. Once we put it up, we keep increasing our estimate of ultimate loss. So this is a little embarrassing for actuaries, I would say, in that, you know, every year we're like, this is our best estimate for sure, but it keeps going up every single year after that. Now, this is the same cycle updated for 2012 information, so those are the dotted lines. And, you know, some people are kind of hopeful, a lot of equity analysts, when I show them this, are quite happy that 2011 accident year seems to be sort of dipping back down again. I would say here, you know, a lot of those reserve releases you saw for accident year 2011 are from personal lines, and so I don't really see this as a trend that will keep going. So now this is a picture for all lines of business, but if I show you now just the cycle for workers' comp on the same scale, you can see that there is a really huge cycle here versus the one for homeowners, which doesn't have much of a cycle at all. Which makes sense. Really, this reserving cycle phenomenon is really a long-tailed casualty line issue. And that makes a lot of sense. It's a lot harder to reserve for long-tailed casualty lines than it is for, say, homeowners. We're also seeing this for every single insurance company that writes any sort of commercial lines, long-tailed line type business. So this is a particular company. I just put it out from the annual statement. In red is their cycle outline on top of the industry cycle. And we're starting to calculate betas for individual companies according to how closely they follow the market cycle. So this has a beta of 1. Another example, this is another company, follows the cycle pretty closely, but it goes up and down by more than the cycle, so this has a beta of 1.3. So we pretty much find I haven't done a company yet who does not follow this cycle like these ones do. Now, we also, not only do we see it for every single company, we see it, actually this is not that clear, but anyway, we see it for all the liability, long-tailed liability lines of business. So you can see I've got the cycle outline here for commercial auto, general liability, medical, products, and workers' comp. Just the cycle outlines for each of these lines. And you can see from like 94 or so, they've all gone up and down in sync with each other. So there's a huge amount of correlation there, which is a problem, you know, if you're trying to diversify and you write other casualty lines, are you really diversifying your reserve risk? And again, I don't know why they move up and down in sync, but they have. I mean, that's sort of historical fact. Now, what causes this cycle? And that's really the crux of the issue. And what all our clients ask us, is there any way to avoid this cycle going forward into the future? And for that, I want to zoom into this workers' comp cycle, just to make it much easier to look at. So on top of this workers' comp cycle, I'm going to put on medical inflation. And that's in red. You can read that off the second y-axis. And you can see that the shape of the workers' comp cycle, especially for the first half of the graph, the shape of the workers' comp cycle and the medical CPI is sort of the same, except medical CPI has been shifted forward by like 5 or so years. And that actually makes a lot of sense. So if, you know, bear with me, and hopefully you can follow this. Let's say you had a workers' comp claim in 1984. So back there in accident year 1984. Your first estimate as an actuary, you're going to have to estimate ultimately how much this claim is going to cost. And I think initially it'll cost a dollar. I can see inflation's pretty low. I'm going to go with a dollar. Next year, I re-estimate the ultimate loss for that claim, and I can see inflation's increased a bit, right? So I'm going to go with $1.05. So that's the next line in this graph. The next year I see inflation has increased again, and I'm going to go with $1.10. And that's how you end up going up and up and up this cycle until I end up at $1.20 10 years later, because inflation has increased from about 5% to about 11% during that time. So you can see, you know, one of the reasons why we think, you know, we still have the cycle is because of these changes, unexpected changes in future trends like medical inflation. So the only way really to sort of avoid writing business thinking it will cost a dollar, but then it costs $1.20, is to know in advance that inflation would go from 5% to 11%, which is a very hard thing to do. It's very hard to predict inflation out for the next 5-10 years. So is it inevitable that we have this cycle going forward? I think yes, but it's not like there's nothing we can do about it. And I think being more aware of these economic trends when actuaries are doing reserving is really key to controlling the cycle. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Jess. We have about 5 minutes for questions. I know we're going to get into this a little bit more on the second session as well, but any questions to start for the panelists? Yes.
I guess it just from my perspective, and again thinking about it from the outside, and both Steve and Jess touched on it, at least in the word you used every couple times, is how do you deal with inflation and in the various aspects that you talked about, especially reserving? I mean, and I'm thinking not just, and again, this is based on my reading headlines, not just the nominal inflation, CPI, and those things, but the fact that, you know, homeowners have more computers in their homes than they used to, and or cars are just simply more expensive, and damage to cars is more expensive now because it's all fiberglass and you have to replace the entire panel as opposed to just knocking out a dent in something that's metal. I mean, there are various aspects to what I, you know, maybe naively perceive as, well, casualty claims are going to go higher, you know, even though the number of incidents might not.
Anyone want to take a...
Okay.
Push the button on the...
Hello? Okay. I think from a reserving perspective, you know, I did reserve. Keep pressing it?
I think every time.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Only one,
that was
only
me.
One's allowed to be used.
I apologize.
Okay. Okay.
You had the power to
okay, sorry. Sorry. It was you. Okay. So, you know, as a reserving actuary for many years before I joined Guy Carpenter, reserving actuaries use methods, first of all, that don't really get us to estimate sort of future claims inflation explicitly. All the methods that we use sort of integrate claims inflation very implicitly. So what you'll end up with is an estimate that sort of within that estimate is just the, whatever the historical claims inflation was, that's what we're going to have in our estimate. There's no way to break it out and use a different, you know, future claims inflation number. So I think there is probably the biggest problem is that our methods really haven't changed much in the last few decades, I suppose, and there is no explicit estimate for claims inflation. So I think, you know, we're trying to change that with more innovation in reserving, like generalized linear models, like predictive modeling in reserving, but it's a very slow process. Yeah.
I just want to add, I think Ed's asking two questions, really. One is, as both Jess and Mike and I touched on, we're talking about potentially 10-year reserving at some point. And so the question in part is traditional inflation, how do you forecast 10 years ahead? I mean, it's tough enough to forecast these days about a month or two ahead, much less 10 years. And so obviously that's one challenge, very difficult to overcome. Beyond that is perhaps a bigger problem, which has to do with the value of things that are insured, and the example of a car or computers and homes are good ones. I don't know of any model that we have that would be able to, in some useful way, anticipate increase in the value of things, especially given some of the counter trends. I mean, not only do we have more computers in homes, but computers that are more powerful and no more expensive than things we would have bought 10 years ago. So it's a very different kind of measure that we're trying to find, and I'm not aware of anybody that's come up with it, so you're just stuck, is what it comes down to.
So you have
yes.
Just a couple of thoughts on that. One, the insurance industry is, dare to say, innovative on some of this. When you think of the material in the house, if you think of the homeowner's policy, you know, we've got coverage A, B, C, and D. And the material inside the house would be, I guess, coverage C. And we do have sublimits around that. So, you know, whether your, you know, computer is whatever, the most expensive computer or not, there are sublimits around things like that. When it comes to the inflation on cars, and I have to say from just a personal incident, you know, my son got into a little fender bender coming back from track practice. I was astonished at how much it cost. Again, getting back to the point of, you know, we're using, I guess, smaller materials in cars that make them collapse more. And while the cost to repair the car was a lot more than I ever thought it would be, no one was hurt. There were no injuries. And so, you know, just the fact that we're using more expensive materials, we're using airbags, we're using things in cars, it's saving lives. And let's not get into the philosophical debate of the cost of a life, but I think, you know, we're seeing increases here, but I think we're seeing some decreases here. So there's some offsetting effects going on. And then the last piece of this whole inflation discussion, one of the things as a former chief actuary, what we had done with, you know, looking at shocks to inflation, what would happen if inflation, you know, went up by 250 basis points? And there's a lot of discussion around this. And we actually did that modeling, and we did a lot of work on it. Obviously, it's a big number. So we looked at our reserve base and said, you know, what happens if there's a 200 basis point change, a 500 basis point change? What would that do to our liabilities? And the number is big, especially if you're writing a lot of long tail business. And that's only, I think to paraphrase Harry Truman, half of the walnut. If you look, because what happens if inflation goes up by that much, it will have a change to your assets. It will have a change to your investment returns. So you really need to look at the combined balance sheet income statement effect of a large change shock to inflation. But as Jess alluded to, and we talked about it in part of my slides, our methods, our traditional methods, are not good at this. They're not good at this. And that's why I kind of push for go beyond some of the traditional analyses, beyond the traditional methods. So,
well,